Hello everyone, welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. First and foremost, thank you very much to our sponsors, Jason, LaVon, David, Judo TV, use discount code Shintaro, Higashi Brands. We have a very special guest today, Robert Eriksson. You are 17 years Swedish coach, and now you're the U.S. Judo coach, correct?
Yes, that's true. I recently started working for USA Judo,
And you know, you logged on and I saw you and I was like, wow, this guy looks so familiar. Because I fought 100 kilograms back when you were competing, but I was still pretty young. So I was like maybe 18 years old when you were 2003 was when you kind of finished off.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So who did you compete against in the U.S.?
In the U.S.?
Yeah.
Oh, I did fight Brian Olsen one time, but it was in 90 kilo when I was 90 kilo. I fought him in the World Championships one time in
Birmingham. Nice.
I was lucky. he was much better than me, but I won that fight. I fought Michael Barnes from.
Barnes, Roddy Ferguson. So all those guys were like.
I never fought him. I never fought Roddy Ferguson. No, we were. I didn't do 100 that long. I did it just 1.5 year maybe.
Okay, so nice. So as I was coming in, you were already kind of leaving. Right, so we have a little bit of but you do look familiar, and now you're the U.S. coach. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so it's a new experience. As I said, you said I was for many years the head coach for a Swedish team. Then I got after Tokyo Olympic Games, I retired as a coach. I was working for a couple of years as a sport director, high performance director. Then I did leave judo totally. I started working for another sport organization in Sweden. And then this opportunity came up, and I decided to go back coaching.
Wow! So the U.S. Judo called you and said, "Hey, can you? You live in the States now too, right?"
Yeah, I moved here.
When did you move here?
I first came like 2 months in the end of last year.
Okay, nice.
To get familiar a little bit more with USA Judo, and then I moved in the end of January.
Nice. So what is this program? Like, what happened? Like, I hear there's a national training center now all of a sudden that people are doing events. It's a big space, right?
Yeah. So what happened was that USA Judo, they teamed up with an organization who's called the US Performance Center, which is located here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
And this organization, US Performance Center, is kind of what OTC, Colorado Springs, was in the past, or still is. Sports have relocated here because of they get good facilities, they get a good financial support to establish themselves here. So judo, for some reason, this was before I was hired, they teamed up with them, and then they were looking for a coach, and in the end I got the job. So I'm just basically been here now for 2 months.
So what sports are there at the Performance Center in Charlotte?
So for now, they have it. We are sharing the facilities with Taekwondo. They're in the same, next door to us. Then they have USA Rugby, field hockey, table tennis for para team, archery, skateboard. They have a lot of sports like onboarding. I think they have, in total, they're working with 15 or 17 sports.
That's amazing. And then the space for training, is that like, is it a big space or...
Yeah, for now, like our dojo is not massive, like it's a very good dojo that they build it for us. So they have like this typical spring floor, you know, that all Japanese dojos has.
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
Which is really, really good for the breakfalls. And then they have a gym for us that we can use.
Nice.
So it's good.
So how many square feet is the tatami area, do you think? Maybe you don't use square feet because you're from Sweden.
No, I'm from Sweden. But it's like. 1 8x8 competition area by the safety zones, so it's
okay.
It's not that big, but I think in a year or two we're gonna have a bigger space.
How many randori can you do in that space? Probably like 5 teams, 10 people. Do randori once,
you can have like 10, 15 people doing randori.
That's not so bad. That's pretty good, actually. Yeah.
It's okay.
And then, so do people train there like full time? Is there like a dormitory?
It's not a dormitory. There is, of course, because we are located at the University of North Carolina. we use the facilities there. But for now, like, nobody's staying in the dormitory. We are, like, they're putting up their own apartments. So
are you guys doing like a regular dojo that's open to the public? Like, hey, kids can come train. No, it's just performance, period.
It's only high performance. There's only our dojo. So there's no kids training. There is no recreational training. There is nothing.
Wow.
So what we do is we have the high performance pathway, of course. But then I work a little bit with the local clubs in the area.
Okay.
So we have them coming in as bodies, training partners a couple times a week.
How many people have relocated who are like currently on the roster that lives there full-time, trains there full-time?
Yeah. So now it's just six.
It's a start. Yeah, right? It's a new program. Yeah. It's normal to have that kind of numbers, right?
So we're probably going to have about 13, 14 in June when everybody finish school, because some people are still in high school. So they finish school.
Are you focused on juniors? Is this like a part of the run for the Olympic thing?
Yeah, it's from normally it's from under over 18 and above. Okay.
Yeah.
We can accept some younger. We have some younger athletes. But it's one of the parts for building up towards LA. Of course, it's one way of using it. Of course, for the residential players, but we're also going to try to have smaller training camps and invite people to come and train.
Yeah, I remember a couple months ago, the US Judo reached out and, hey, do you want to go to this training camp in Charlotte? And I was like, I have no idea what that is, you know, and I didn't bother, but... that's something new. Usually they do it at Jimmy Pedro's or something, you know. So
it was like they did as I understand it. Please understand that I only been here a couple of months. I don't have don't know everything about USA Judo, but they normally do like a winter national camp in December. I think the previous years they have done it in Texas.
Yes.
But this year, last year they decided to do it here in Charlotte in the university. So they had the national camp here for 4 days. And it was good. It was like 130 players or something here.
Wow. And you guys did that all in that 8x8 tatami?
No. Then we bring tatamis.
That's great. Yeah.
Because there's like a big gymnasium, like next outside our dojo, like a big basketball gymnasium where you can put the mats.
So let's talk about that. I was so curious because I almost went to it, right? To like, you know, make YouTube and stuff like this. So like, what is that about? Like, was it like 130 like high performance athletes or just anyone and everyone just came and trained?
So for that camp, first I would say I was not organizing the camp because this was during my first visit in US. So I was just taking part as one of the coaches. So normally they invite and fund the camp for those athletes who are being in the national team.
Yes.
Being like Team USA for Pan Ams, World Championships team, etc. And then it was also open for those who ever want to participate by their own cost, like they have to pay to get there. It was no cost for the training camp, but they have to pay their own hotel.
Yeah. I mean, kind of nice too, because then you get an Airbnb, stuff everybody in a room, like all that stuff that, you know, you can kind of do and get away. So maybe I'll send some guys next time.
It was okay for me. This is normal, you know. Okay, but we do national training camps two times a month, maybe. This is normal. But here it's this is one time a year, so it's a little bit
different. I mean, it's a small judo nation. You know, US is massive, but it's a small judo nation, and I think we're still sort of in the developmental stage. We've been stuck there for a little while, you know, because funding is kind of sparse, which, you know, so does the performance center pay you or US Judo pay you?
So we have a budget for the performance center, which include me.
And it includes,
so it includes my costs, and it includes money we can use for funding the athletes, for housing and for travel expenses and etc. So it's a quite good budget, actually.
Yeah. So you are in charge of everything. Like, do you have staff that helps you with all the administrative stuff, or is it like, all right, you're here, you do everything?
For now, of course, I work together with USA Judo, of course, with the high performance group, but. Like here on the local area, I do everything which is
That's brutal. It's a lot of work, probably, right?
I used to it, you know. I did to do this. I did the same in Sweden. Like, I did all the logistics and everything for Sweden for 20 years. So
But I would feel like, you know, in Europe with the judo, like, you're gonna have more staff and more people helping you out. No.
Now we have when I left, Like before I left, when I was Cypress Performance Director, I set a new system, so we had more coaches. But when I was working, we were just a few coaches.
Wow. Okay. So what is the plan for like you getting? Obviously, you want athletes to do well at the Olympics because you're going to be the head coach and everything, right?
So I'm not going to be the head coach for Olympics. Like there is no head coach for USA Judo. They don't have a national team that way, which I hope we can have in the future. This training center can be a part in it.
Yeah.
To help the best athletes in US to prepare together. No matter if they're a residential player or if they just come in for training camps or whatever they decide to. But
yeah.
So of course this is a pathway towards the Olympics. One pathway, which if you look around the world, what everybody else is doing is what everybody else is doing. And what I would say for USA Judo, they need it also, because especially as it's a big country. People are spread out and they're doing whatever they are doing, you know.
Yeah, baseball, football, not judo.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Exactly.
Yeah. So is there like a heavy like a recruiting campaign of like, hey, identify key players at US Nationals, top five gets an email, hey man, we have this opportunity to train full time if you want to do it. Because a lot of these kids who aren't training full time never really make it, right? You probably trained full time when you were an athlete.
Yeah, I did.
You gotta be pro, right?
Yeah. Yes. Again, US is a little bit different. I almost said a normal country. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. With a normal structure, you create the training center, you have a national team, then you select the people and they come.
Yes, that's right.
If you don't come to the national team, if you don't come to the training center, you don't get funded, you don't get selected.
Yes.
This is what all the big countries are doing. And this is like you're a piece in the system. Here it's a bit different. Like you have to, as you say, you have to recruit people, and which I'm not used to at all.
Yeah, like, you got the salesman almost, right?
I'm used to do the opposite, to say no to people. You're not good enough. You cannot come. Here it's a little bit different. So what we are doing is, first of all, try to inform about it. This is what we have. This can be a good help if you are by yourself in your club. You have no seniors to train with, or you have no funding.
Yeah, I mean, this is part one, right? I mean, because like we get a lot of listens and views, you know, I don't know if you watch any of my YouTube stuff, but this is kind of the way to get people out there, you know, and informed. Because I'm in judo, like really deep into it, and I didn't even know about it until recently.
No, I know.
You know, so that's not good, you know, that I didn't know about it, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, and this is not only you, like many people now starting to realize this is happening and they're showing a lot of interest. I think it's also common, because many people, they complain about they have no funding and they have no support. But also you must understand that to have funding and to have support, it also comes with responsibilities.
Definitely, 100%.
You cannot already decide by yourself what you're going to do all the time if you get funded. Like if I'm going to pay you to come to the training center, of course you have to follow the program. You have to work in a professional way, and me as a national coach will decide if you're good enough to go to tournaments or training camp or whatever it is. And as this is always most of the case how it works, like if somebody pays you something, you always have to give something back.
Yes.
But I have the feeling sometimes here that people want money, they want support, but they don't want to do anything.
Yes. Are you familiar with the New York Athletic Club at all?
Yeah, I know about it. I don't know exactly how it works, but I know they have it in New York Open and that they are supporting some of the athletes.
Same thing. So it's like, you know, there's a requirement, like you have to compete at U.S. Nationals. You have to go to the World Championships, you know, like all these tournaments, like you kind of have to do, right? Like it's not that big. So, but are you going to do something like that? Like, hey, if you are part of this program, you have to compete in the U.S. Nationals.
Yeah, of course. If you apply and get accepted to the program.
Yeah.
You're going to be a part of the training structure and the high performance structure. And in this case, you have to commit to a training program, first of all.
Yeah.
And then I make a planning for the athletes and a planning for the group, for the team, and of course, an individual planning for each athlete. Say, hey, this is what you're going to do, depending on your level and what is best for you now.
Mm. So if someone's listening, right, they're like a black belt, 18, 19 years old, pretty good, winning local tournaments, going to junior nationals, doing well. Like, what can they expect when they join your program, in terms of training, like all the stuff? Like, what can they expect to get if they sign up and say, all right, you know, take me away, bro. You know, take me to the top.
First of all, like if they come and they commit and they have the level for it, what they do, like they get somebody, in this case it's me, I'm going to take the responsibility of develop them. Like you put them in the high performance environment where they can do training every day, twice a day, with twice judo, strength, like today, for now, the program now we do twice a day with always coaches there, like I'm always there.
Yeah.
Vision coaches is there every day. They can go to the athletic trainers to get treatment, massage, whatever they need if they get injured.
Yeah.
And they can get to the nutritionist to get help with the weight cut and everything. So it's
so
a really.
Who are some of your guys now or girls that are on the team that are doing well now in the country, internationally? I'm trying to gauge like what the level is over there and what sort of the bare minimum you have to be. Because you were saying, like, some people apply, and it's like, sorry, you're not good enough. Like, where is that line?
Yeah, that's quite hard for me to say, because some people I know a little bit more because they have been to the training camps we had, or I have been traveling around quite much to visiting some areas to do some regional training camps and visit some clubs so I can get to know some athletes and coaches.
Yeah.
So it's not so much about the results. It's more about that you're you have to compete in a national level and international. Of course, that's the first.
Like adults, right?
Yeah, or junior. Like junior is okay. You know?
Yeah,
on a junior level, of course.
Yeah.
But if you only been competing like on a regional level then it's can be hard. You know.
So you have 6 athletes that are competing at a national, international level right now. Living there.
Yeah.
Can you say who they are, or?
Yeah, for now we have Sarah Golden. She's 63 kilo. She's fighting.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that name.
She's been on the world team a couple of times.
It's
Jared Kosse. He's from Los Angeles, LA Tannery. He was on the.
Okay.
He was on the junior world team last year. There was David, I guess Aksaharian. He's also from LA. He fought in some Grand Slams.
Okay, and, good.
Then we have Will Spate. He's from here. He fights at national level. Isabella Garriga. Garriga.
Okay, yeah.
She's from Texas. She's also been in the world junior team. Yeah, there's some of those athletes.
Wow, that's quite the roster, man. I kind of expect, you know, that's a legitimate roster for you guys to train, right?
It is. It's good. They're good athletes. They want to start, but I think we have the best potential. Okay, we need more, and we have some younger guys coming in, as I said, in the summer.
Yeah, that's nice to have that base, and then it's going to draw people to come train with them. That's really good, you know?
I hope so.
Yeah. So what is the daily training like? Like in the mornings you lift, do you do judo in the morning? Do you do judo twice a day? They have to lift on their own, right? Like what is the...
So like a normal week. Basic normal week, like for example, then we do it on Monday morning, we do either conditioning or judo training, technical training, or both.
Yeah.
And then in the evening and afternoon, we do randori training.
Mm.
Tuesdays, we do strength and conditioning, like lift with the coach, strength and conditioning coaches.
Yeah.
And then we do again judo in the afternoon. Wednesdays, normally we do an easy session, like technical session or a conditioning session, then rest. It's only one session on Wednesday.
Well, that's good.
We start over again Thursday, Friday, same 2 sessions a day, lift, condition, technical training, and then Saturday we do 1 training in the morning. So then they have the rest of the weekend off.
So I was talking to Jimmy Pedro. I'm sure you know who Jimmy Pedro is. He was saying any athlete that wants to go international level should compete 50 to 100 matches a year domestically.
Domestically,
minimum, bare minimum. Maybe not domestically, but like trying to go to local tournaments just to get matches and practice in, you know, mat time in. What do you think about that? Is that a good idea?
You have to get the mat time. You have to get the hours. 50 to 100. Yeah, it's depending on. Like normally you say like in 1 year, then I would talk maybe international level. Like if you can do like 50 fights a year.
Yeah.
Then you're doing good because that means like 10 competitions. You do 5 fights. If you do 5 fights a competition, you always fight for a medal.
That's true.
Maybe most people doesn't reach that, but you also have to come to take it against the training volume. Because when you travel a lot, you know, you're losing the training volume.
That's true.
Maybe not really do domestical, because then you go like Friday, you're back home Sunday. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. But if you travel international, like many people do now, and they say that they go to Europe for competition with the jet lag and travel, they four or five days and you go have one or two fights.
True.
You know, if you do that 5-6 times a year, you lose 5-6 weeks of training.
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah.
So that's why I think you must look over it and see that you go to tournaments where you win fights. And when you do training camps, like you go do the tournament and then you do the training camp or whatever, you know. So you need to get that quality time in.
Yeah. So you're doing like active social media stuff to where kind of trying to get in front of the judo athletes in the country, reaching out to like people through Instagram and such, or having like a, you know, like a forward client facing sort of a situation.
Like USA Judo do it a little bit. They try to promote it. I don't do it personally. Like I have a really small Instagram account. I suck at social media, to be honest. I'm too old for that. No, but but they're trying to push it. I think again, we live in today in a social media culture. The kids, you know, we have to attract them that way.
Yeah.
So I guess it's more things to do to get more out there.
Are you guys going to go to the U.S. Nationals? It's coming up in a month or two, right?
Yeah, of course. I've been to quite many tournaments now in U.S. I was in the Youth Nationals. I've been to the Dallas Open, the President Cup.
Nice.
Winter National in California. So I've been to some tournaments and see like the level.
Is it very different from Sweden when you go to the Nationals in Sweden?
It's different. I would say the numbers are maybe the same. Like it's not a big difference. Of course, you know, Sweden, we have 10 million people in population.
Oh, that's small. I thought it was more. I guess I don't know much about Europe. So
No, it's really small compared to US, of course. So in that case, okay, we have maybe more athletes, but I think the biggest difference is here, there is a lot more like tournaments where everybody comes. Like it's kids, it's elite and it's veterans and it's
the mix.
Novice, it's everything. Yeah. So it's a very big mix. In Sweden, it's a little bit more divided when you compete.
Okay, it's only juniors, only seniors, only
veterans. Not only, but like it's very rare that they have like beginners in the first time competitors in the same as like advanced.
Yes, that's true. That's very true.
And the Nationals is only the Nationals. It's not like brown belt or novice. It's only like one category.
And you coached in Sweden for a very long time.
Yeah.
So what's some of the athletes that you've kind of coached through the years? Some of your best results as an athlete and a coach?
Oh, so the best athletes we had throughout the years are probably still is going is Marcus Nyman, 90 kilo.
I know him. Medalist. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay. I saw him at the Tokyo Grand Slam when I competed in that, maybe 2009 or 10 or 11 or something like that. So I saw him there. Big boy.
Yeah, he's a big guy. We had also before in the 100 kilo was probably fighting the same. He fought at the same time as you did. It was Martin Paček.
Oh, yeah. Very tall guy.
Very tall.
Yeah.
Kuminagi.
Yeah.
He was also very good.
So you coach these guys too. That's awesome.
Yeah, and Tommy Macias, he was world medalist also, 73 kilo.
Yeah.
Anna Bernholm, she was also fighting for medals in the world. She was number two or number three in the world ranking. Joachim Dwerby, I basically coached everybody the last 20 years.
That's amazing. So when you do the national team as a coach in Sweden, like everyone had to be training at one facility. Kind of like what you're talking about now, or?
No, now they do. Now there is a training center. We had a couple in the past, on and off, because we don't have, again, Sweden is also a small country. We don't really have the infrastructure to have a training center like we wish to. So basically what we did, most of them, they trained in the clubs.
Yeah.
And then we travel, you know, with the national team. I think we travel about 200 days a year.
Okay, wow. That's a lot.
We were always traveling, training camp in Japan or in Europe.
True. So yeah, that's the nice thing about being in Europe, because you could go to France, Germany, you know, all these like European Junior Union competitions and all the tournaments over there. So you guys travel and that's a nice thing, you know?
We need to do it because Sweden is, even if it's in Europe, it's a little bit isolated because it's up in the north.
Yeah.
If you live like in Central Europe, you know, if you go by car, for 5-6 hours, you know, you can reach like a big competition or training camp every weekend, you know.
That's true.
For us, we always have to go by flight, or we could drive, but
the scale of that, like being, you know, Paris Grand Slam and like being at these massive events all the time with your team, and you know, like I put you in judo inside, and then there's a picture of you in a suit and you're in the thing, and IJF so legit now, you know. Do you miss that scale?
Both yes and no. I don't really miss that because I did that for so long and like so many tournaments. I like what I do now also, because I really like the development part of how to bring athletes up and how to create a system, a pathway, because that's also what we did in Sweden, you know, because it's not only about, you know, you coach one or two or three athletes. You have to have a system that you can make people walk through, so they get funding, so they get exposed for different kind of judo and professional training programs and all of that.
So do you talk with a lot of the other big dojos, like Jimmy Pajo, the ones in Florida, Texas, the one like San Jose? Like, do you talk to a lot of those coaches together to like try to coordinate something, or is it pretty isolated?
No, I talk to most of the coaches. I have not met everybody, but I've been to the most big areas. I will go to Pedro's in May. We will go there in a couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to that. I spoke to Jimmy a couple of times.
Nice guy.
So that's right. Yeah. It's a good understanding of sport, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's a lot of people that really do really good things. They try to, but as I said, it's hard, because if you have a club, if you have your own club, professional or a non-profit, it's still there's so many things you have to take care of, you know. When you have a high performance group or high performance athletes, you know, they take so much time. You have to handle the kids, you have to handle the recreational players. Like you cannot travel to Japan for 3 weeks. We're gonna cover the club and you go, or you know. Yep. So it's hard. It's a struggle, you know. Yeah. I
have two dojos in Manhattan, and it's like you know, it's constantly something, you know. Even with staff and a lot of students, it's like, you know, you gotta, this happened, that happened, I gotta do this, I gotta do that, you know. So it's a lot of work for sure. Yeah, it's nice to be able to just focus on the top athletes, right?
It is nice, it's good, but it's also challenging, of course, you know. It's time consuming.
Do you have a coaching style, do you say, like your methodology that's a little bit unique? Or
I don't know if it's unique, but I have my style, like what I think is important, and what I try to coach the athletes. Because I normally like only work like with high performance athletes, and I work a little bit with cadets and junior also in Sweden, but not so much. In this case, I work more with like the strategy and the pathway. I didn't coach them so much face to face. I only did with the seniors. So like my job is more, as I always say, like my job is to try to bring whatever they have and make it as efficient as possible and make it work. Yeah. You know, it's not my job to teach them to do a good uchimata. I assume that they can do uchimata. Maybe I can help them to adjust it a bit so it can start working, or say to them, hey, you shouldn't do uchimata. You should do this technique instead, because now you train uchimata. No, not for me. Like, it's more a tactical and a physical approach, like how you apply the kumikata, how you build your style so it can be effective. As I see it, many people, especially here in the US, you know, I think that in general, the technical level is quite okay, you know. It's not too bad. There are some really good players there, but many of them don't really know how to apply it, especially not in international level, because...
Yeah.
Of course not. They don't get exposed to it so much here, because they fight each other.
That's true. You know?
So like they don't break the kumikata. They maybe don't. Maybe they're training, like, for example, like I said, example, like we have athletes which I have come across. They are training. Some of them are training really hard. Like they train like 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and then you have some who like maybe train 5, 6 hours a week. But when you see the results, it's no difference. They have the same results, which is kind of strange to me, you know. if you train that much, you should probably have a better output. Or if you train that little, you shouldn't be able to. So it's about finding a good balance, you know, for everybody.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, that's so interesting, man. Yeah, because, you know, sometimes you go international, you get Georgian guys or Mongolian guys that wrap around. And then if you never really experienced that, you know, you could potentially have a hard time, right?
You have a potential. You know, it's not potential. You're going to have a hard time, you know. But, you know, just making people aware of, like, when you do a randori, we can say here in the training center, they do randori. I see they do randori. Mm. And they don't break the grips. They just keep it. They're comfortable because it feels good for both of them. I say, hey, you cannot do that. If you stand in that situation, you're going to get thrown. You know, you must make sure you can dominate. You must make sure you can dominate the grips. For sure, you've seen. I saw you were commentating now in Tbilisi and Antalya. You know? You see the level of the athletes today. Like, it's crazy. Like, the level is crazy. Different. Like, the technical and the physical standards today are so high. You know, they're so high.
Way different. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're not training in a way to prepare yourself for that, you have no chance. You know?
No chance. Yeah. Are you still doing randori with your athletes?
I'm trying not to. No, I have a really bad body. I can do a little bit kumikata, nivasa. Yeah. I can do a little bit, but I did a little bit. I did it quite much before.
Yeah.
Until like 5, 6, 7 years ago, then you know my team in Sweden, they were too strong. I was just in the way.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So, when you would turn around 40 years old?
I'm 47, man. So.
Wow. You look young, though. You look so good, man. That's good. That's amazing.
No. So, no, I tried not to do it. I can jump in and do a little bit, like, but you know.
Yeah.
I'm too
So, scared. If you wanted to, like, is there, like, a top 5 guys in the U.S. that you want to come to your facility right now? Like, who are they? Like, what would you say to them? Like, if they're listening, maybe.
I don't want to do it. Like, I don't want to mention anybody by name like that.
Okay.
Maybe
we're
getting wrong, but I think if you look on the teams now that they have, younger ones and the older ones, comparing, like the best scenario would be, like, you prepare a big group of athletes that the most of them would make their, like, Olympic debut in LA, so they could last for one more Olympics, you know, so you can really work to that.
That'd be great.
But now we're a bit late, you know, it's 4 years to LA and, you know, started to prepare a performance system with 4 years before. It's rough.
Yeah. Definitely need about 2 cycles to really develop them.
Yeah. I would say normally if you're in a good level, like let's say that you're in a level that you can fight, maybe not to win a medal in Grand Prix, Grand Slam, but maybe a top 7 or, you know, close to it. Then you probably would need like two to 2 to 4 years to make that transfer to like be the top, to be number one.
Nice.
So, but I think today there's maybe 5-10 people out there in US who are, I think, have a really good potential to get there.
Yeah. I mean, like Jack Janetska's pretty good now. I see him out there, you know, the
but he's there, sharp, like, you know. Yeah, like you can only look at the stats, you know, like if you are, like normally you say, if you're like 23, 25, and you never like fought for a big medal, like in the world championships or in top 5 or you win a Grand Prix or Grand Slam, it's not likely that you're going to fight for a medal in the Olympics later, you know?
Yeah.
But for example, Jack is a good example. He's like 21, 21, I think.
21, 22, something like that, young.
Yeah, and he's there, you know. When he has a good day, he win a medal. When he's not having a good day, he win 1 or 2 fights, you know. So he's really building up. So he's a good, but you have some athletes, to be honest, that are fighting on the tour for US. That's, I think, for like 20 or 30 competition, they have no results, you know.
Yeah. So when you see it's an not athlete, likely like, that, yeah. So when you see like an athlete that you're like kind of coaching and stuff, like what is the differentiator between like this guy going to do it? Even if he hasn't done it yet, like maybe you just kind of have a feeling. Is there something about somebody that you're like, oh, this guy's going to, because I'm sure you've been around athletes your whole life and what this
Of course. First of all, I would say like the biggest thing is for those athletes who are committed and really do the job, but they do it for themselves. You understand what I mean? They're really committed because they want to, they don't do it for somebody else, or they want to get famous, or they want to make money or whatever. They really want to do it for themselves. Right. And they are, what is also like, they're open-minded and coachable. Like you can work with them, and they are open to develop. But I think everybody can develop, you know. You just have to find what everybody has as a strength. Yeah. Identify that strength and try to build it around it. Then, of course, not everybody can be Olympic champion, but they can maybe win a Grand Prix medal. That can be good enough for some people, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's a, you know, fulfilling career sometimes, right? What was your highest finish for your results when you were competing?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That was not so much. I was fighting, like, I was a fifth place at the Rotterdam Grand Slam Prix or whatever it was called.
Oh, Rotterdam used to be humongous back then. Remember that? That's a different time.
Yeah.
Before the Grand Prix and the Grand Slams, but man.
Yeah, it was different. It was different. I won some medals in like the British Open and those kind of.
Ooh, that's a good one. And, yeah.
So, no, I was not really a super good player. I was like average, I would say.
Nah, but you know, internationally average is different. You know, that's a great place to be, right? Making it out of your country consistently, that's not an easy thing to do either, you know?
No, it's not. No, but it was okay. But I started judo quite late. So, you know, I didn't have that really, I didn't have that depth. Like I developed it quite late. So it was a bit different, but it was what it was.
Then I
transferred to coaching instead, and it was better for me. So I was
that's great. Coach. Yeah. Well, best of luck to you in the U.S. You know, thank you for being here and helping, you know, the Americans get to where they need to be. And you let me know if you want me to help in any way, whether it's like get, you know, social media exposure or whatever it is, man. Thank you very much for
next time
coaching.
For next time, for sure, you should come to the training camp.
Definitely. I'm definitely, you know, when they let me know ahead of time, they literally told me the week off, like, hey, can you go down there and make videos with the guys? I was like, I can't just leave my kid here, you know, 1 week before and then just go, you know? So it's like, but I'm sure they'll give me more notice. Yeah, let me know. Thank you very much for being on here. And where can they find you? Where can people find you? Where can people talk to you?
So they can find me on the go to USA Judo on the homepage, on the staff. They can find my name and my phone number. They can call me there or send me an email. Otherwise, they just come to Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm here.
Charlotte, North Carolina. All right, great. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. Take care.